What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy Tuesday, January 22nd. We are one day closer to the Super Bowl, which means we are still a long way from the Super Bowl, but we will be coming to you daily with podcast. I am Will Brinson. I am your host. This is CBS Sports' daily NFL show. I'm joined for the second day in a row by John Breach. What's up, John?
Joined for the second day in a row by John Breach, who is still in New Orleans. Brinson, I don't think I'm going to leave. Can I just live here? Is that possible? Do you think anybody's going to care?
Do you think that, well, your wife will care? There's no way she listened to this podcast, so I feel like we can get away with this. Does she think you're there, like, staying an extra night for work? Or is she like, yeah, go have fun, John. You know, you've been, like, basically ignoring me for 6 months. Go have fun an extra night in New Orleans. What's the deal there?
No, she knows Monday night, Bourbon Street night. She knew I had never been to New Orleans. This trip for the NFC title game was my first trip ever. And she's like, her jaw dropped. She's like, you've never been to New Orleans? I think at that point it hit in her head that I might not survive the trip, because it's like, your 21st birthday. You go out, all of a sudden you can buy all the drinks you want and people are just throwing them in front of you. That is your first trip to Bourbon Street.
So you weren't at CBS for the Harbaugh Bowl? I don't remember who was where, but I mean, I was thinking you were with us in the, oh no, that's right. Because you were doing the live blog remotely when the power went out. That's right. We talked about this last night. We might have. At any rate, I was suggesting you go to Giacomo's. I told you to go. Did you go to Cochon Butcher? Probably not.
I'm going to eat dinner there tonight.
Oh, nice. Do they do dinner there?
Maybe. I hope so.
There's two restaurants. Be careful. Cochon is the restaurant. Cochon Butcher is the sandwich shop. Cochon is like a fancy dinner place. I recommend Giacomo's. We'll see what you do. We'll get a full replay on that. What is the mood? But we're going to talk about the more fallout. And first of all, look, I want to apologize to podcast listeners because we got multiple tweets. Monday's show was not our best show. You know, I don't look, I do this show daily, Monday through Friday. I work pretty hard. Like, I care about the show passionately. I want the show to be really good. I want people to enjoy it every single day. Most of the times, like, I get done with it, I'm like, that was a good show, but I don't think I'm ever like, that show might have sucked. And so if Monday's show wasn't your cup of tea and me and Sean and Ryan screaming, I apologize. Breach and I, we've kicked Sean off. He's banned from the podcast forever. He doesn't know it. I haven't told him yet, but he's banned. We're going to break down some of the fallout from the Saints-Rams game that you've seen in New Orleans, and then talk a little bit more about Chiefs-Patriots and maybe some of the bigger issues. And then we'll talk about the craziest things that happened over the week, because we got a lot of time to kill, John, until the old Super Bowl gets here. By the way, I'm told, and I hope I'm not wrong here, but I'm told that there's going to be Pick Six video show 12 to 1 every day at the Super Bowl live from Radio Row. So make sure and get your CBS Sports HQ set up. You can go to cbssports.com/live if you want to watch on your desktop or laptop. Or you can just get Roku, Apple TV, PlayStation, Xbox, whatever your system is. You can get it. It's free 24/7. If you support the podcast, please watch this show at Super Bowl. I'll have more information, but it'll be live from Radio Row. And we'll have our normal podcast that we release each day. So that's exciting. Anyway. But please check out CBS Sports HQ. At any rate, John, so the Rams and the Saints played. And as we know, the Saints got screwed by the refs. And then this crazy, you and I were chatting about this crazy rule in the rule book, the NFL rule book, that was dug up by Mike Florio, who, like, I like Florio because he will stir the pot. But he's also, like, he's a lawyer and he knows how to dig into rule books and complaints and all that stuff and find nuggets that might be interesting. And he found this one, and I'd seen it before, but I'd never even really thought about it. And it doesn't seem like anything that would ever happen. But Roger Goodell, under this rule, has the authority, if he wanted, to name the Saints NFC champions and have them go play the Patriots in the Super Bowl, right?
Well, here's the thing with Florio is, I swear that dude has the entire rule book memorized. And the rule book is like 5,000 pages. It is not possible for anyone to memorize it, but I'm pretty convinced Florio does, because anytime there's any sort of weird event, he's either tweeting about obscure rule A, section 2, by line one of a rule, or he is writing a story about it. But this was a clutch pickup. It's not a rule that anyone else, I think, realized at the time. And basically, if there is an extraordinarily unfair circumstance, Roger Goodell has the power to either rule the other team the winner, to have the game replayed, or start the game over from where the circumstance took place. And obviously, there is about 0.0001% chance that this would ever happen. But the fact that he has the power and he could do something about this is kind of crazy. And if I were Roger Goodell, I mean, I mean, it's absolutely nuts. And if I were Roger Goodell, I would give this, I would call a press conference Tuesday and I would say, you know what, guys, Saints got screwed. The New Orleans nightmare, as Brinson is calling it. The Saints got screwed. We are going to replay this game starting at the 1:45 mark. The Rams have one timeout. The Saints have first and goal. Let's do it. Let's put it on NFL Network, and then boom, that thing's going to get like 75 million viewers. And what do you think about that plan?
So you're saying go back out and start it over from the pass interference penalty? Be like, unfortunately, yes. What happened in the overtime doesn't count. Drew Brees, you buried yourself in a bottle of Jack Daniels. Get out of here. You got to get back in the field and take three knees. And then Will Lutz is going to try a 28-yard field goal with like, and like all these Saints fans have to like stumble, get like take off work and go back. I like it. It sounds great. Or what about if Ndamukong Suh has to go out there and attempt a 57-yard field goal? If he makes it, the Rams go to the Super. Like that's the thing. Goodell can do whatever he wants. And I think that's what is I believe the ruling, and I wrote a story about it, and you and I were talking about this, like I was stunned at like the traffic. It took off like a rocket ship. And like you don't ever see it. I mean, it was just getting like clicked on like crazy, which is all, I mean, it's awesome. We love the clicks, but it shows you that people are legitimately worked up about this and want like a legitimate solution. I think that what this rule is designed to do is basically, if for some reason like the mob managed to infiltrate a football team or the refs, or there's like a Black Sox situation where a game was compromised because of like point shaving or something, then Goodell could step in and make a change. Or I mean, like, doesn't that seem like what it's basically a fail safe for? If the worst possible scenario happens, they can fix it. And I don't think that this rises to that level, even though if you're a Saints fan, I understand why. I mean, how many people signed the latest petition to have the game overturned?
And that's the crazy thing. This petition, when I read it for the first time today, it had 200,000 signatures. When I checked again, 4 hours later, it was up to 330,000. So these petitions never blow up like that. When we wrote about even the one where the Rams wanted Bill Benevich taken off the game, ironically, that Rams fans started that and then ended up benefiting. But even that petition only got up to 8,000. I would say when we write about petitions, they usually have between 5,000 and 10,000 signatures. So enough that it's worth writing about, but not enough that it's ever going to mean anything. But this one has over 300,000. So Saints fans are pretty perturbed. And
my hometown of High Point, North Carolina has 86,000 people in it. I mean, there's more people that have signed this petition to have Roger Goodell invoke this rule. Mike Thomas is tweeting about it. I mean, I think that there's a large segment of them that feel like they absolutely got screwed.
And you mentioned, you know, if the mob was involved or it's a fail safe, but the other part of this is it is a pretty vague rule.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no description of what is an extraordinarily unfair circumstance, so you can make it up as you go. And I would say a blatant pass interference call with under 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter of an NFC championship game could absolutely qualify. And you know, you mentioned some reasons. I feel like a dog running on the field and tackling a player who's about to score a touchdown could be extraordinarily unfair. Like, there's a trillion things you could think of that would be absolutely crazy. But why wouldn't this qualify?
I mean, I understand. I get what you're saying. And here's the actual rule. It says The commissioner has the sole authority to investigate and take appropriate disciplinary and or corrective measures if any club action, non-participant interference, or calamity occurs in an NFL game which the commissioner deems so extraordinarily unfair or outside the accepted tactics encountered in professional football that such action has a major effect on the result of the game. And then it continues. The commissioner's power under this section two include the reversal of a game's result or the rescheduling of a game, either from the beginning or from the point at which the extraordinary act occurred. So you are technically correct. They could just reboot this bad boy right at the pass interference call. And I guess that kind of leads me to my next question. Cause look, this is not going to happen. Roger Goodell is not going to destroy an LA franchise. He's not gonna, if anybody's getting buried, it's not the LA franchise, right? Like, with a young head coach and the superstar, quarterback, budding superstar quarterback in Jared Goff, and the owner who has, ponied up all this money and moved the team to LA and is building this giant stadium where the NFL Network and NFL media are going to be housed. If there was ever a team that is not going to be, Stan Kroenke ripped this team out of St. Louis and took them to LA all in the name of increasing the NFL revenue. He's not getting screwed by the commissioner in this case. Hey, sorry, Sean Payton. I didn't really like you in the first place. Enjoy this one. It's a little bonus for Bounty Gate. But should the NFL now, and Sean Payton mentioned this, he said after his press conference, he's like, look, and you were there, I'm on the competition committee. I'm going to have to look into this. Should the NFL, and the Washington Post has reported this, that they will do this, should the NFL look at pass interference and make it reviewable, yes or no?
I mean, I think this one is the easiest question that anyone has asked me in the past 48 hours, and that is an absolute yes. They should look at it and review it. You know, the thing I wrote after the game was that they should review every single call, keep the two challenges. So if they just made it pass interference, that makes it even easier. There's no reason something like that should go uncalled, you know? So here is the thing, is that you still get your two challenges, and if there's some ticky-tacky pass interference call, a coach isn't going to challenge that because then he loses his challenge flag if they don't rule that it is a penalty. So I understand that the NFL does not want to make subjective penalties challengeable. But you do need to draw the line somewhere and be able to prevent something like this from happening.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is that here's my problem, is that the NFL, and they do this every time, and I probably yelled about this on Monday morning's podcast, whenever people listen, but it annoys me to no end that the NFL is consistently reactive instead of being proactive. And if you didn't think that, you wrote a story about this, there was actually a rule that was changed before the playoffs. It was a very minor rule that was tweaked in order to make sure that the NFL didn't get bit in the rear, by something that happened in a playoff game and then ended up looking like morons. And so in that case, I think that, what you have is a situation you want to avoid that, right? So they should have gone out of their way to figure out how to make something like this an egregious pass interference call where the referee simply forgot to take the flag out of his pocket and simply just screwed up and didn't see it. They should have figured out a way to have a fail safe for that. And that's what replay needs to be. It needs to be a fail safe to make sure that somebody isn't getting screwed. And I think there are multiple cases, four of them that I would identify that you could think about from these games. One, the pass interference call, where Nickell Robey-Coleman tackled Tommy Lee Lewis. Two, I think you can include the Jared Goff face mask where he was going to the Saints ended up scoring. I mean, the Rams ended up scoring a touchdown, so it wasn't a huge deal, but Jared Goff had his face mask pulled at the goal line as he was trying to run in. It would have been first and goal. And so it's perfectly fine to say, hey, why don't we put that under the scope of what is reviewable? Like, if it's an egregious miss, if it's an obvious face mask that the Fox camera catches immediately, why shouldn't the refs be able to come in and say, whoa, 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 whoa. He yanked his face mask. We didn't see it. We were wrong. And then two cases in the Chiefs game. One, the Edelman play in the fumbled punt return where, or unfumbled punt return where he didn't touch it. Andy Reid, Bill Belichick had to challenge that. To me, that's another case where it's such a wild play that the NFL needs to just say, hold on a second. We're going to check this out on replay. Let's see what's going on. And then the other one was the roughing the passer call on Chris Jones when he like slapped Brady's jersey. And it was so clearly not a roughing the passer call, but it gets him 15 yards. To me, you see that instantaneously. Somebody needs to buzz in and say, hold up. Let's check on that and make sure that we got that right, because otherwise it can alter the outcome of an entire game.
Well, I do agree with you that, especially the Brady call, that a coach needs to be able to challenge that and say, yo, that's not a penalty. We need to get that one wiped away. But I do not agree that refs should just make these ambiguous decisions. Like, who's deciding what warrants being reviewed? Because if you take the challenge system out of it and you're just saying, hey, replay guy, you can just buzz down whenever you see something questionable, we could have 10 stops in the first quarter, one stop in the second quarter, 11 stops in the third quarter, and all of a sudden this 3-hour game lasts 7 hours. Nobody wants that. There's got to be some sort of limit. I like the idea, but there's got to be a limit of what can be done so that the game, we don't lose the flow of the game.
I think they're going to make pass interference reviewable. If they do it, do you want it to be universal where the NFL has centralized replay and they handle it? Like Al Riveron's got his feet up smoking a cigar in a dark room with the curtain drawn and he's like, the Patriots win again. Or do you want it to be where the coach has to challenge it in real time? Maybe you give the coaches a fourth challenge. Or say, like, you've got three full challenges. You've not two, win two, get, by the way, the win two and get an extra one is stupid. Well, what are we doing? Just give them three. Like, cause if you miss the first one, I mean, get out of here. Like, what if you got a bad group of refs who screw up stuff the whole game? And so it would have been incumbent on Sean Payton then to have his third challenge in his pocket when he was dealing with, the end of the game situation. How would you want to see that handled?
Oh, I absolutely want challenges involved here. I mean, can you imagine? Mike Tomlin hasn't won a challenge in like 10 years. He's lost like 10 straight challenges. I want to see that guy challenge a pass interference. If Marvin Lewis gets rehired, I want to see him challenge a pass interference. I want to see Andy Reid challenge a pass interference. Like, this adds another layer of thinking to what coaches have to do. And so that means you probably won't see them challenge as often because of how subjective pass interference is. They're probably not going to throw that challenge flag unless they see something like we saw in the Saints-Rams game where Tommy Lou Lewis just got obliterated. So I absolutely want it to be a challenge situation instead of going up to the replay booth and having centralized Al Riveron handling that.
I could see that. That would make sense.
You don't want it, do you?
My concern is like, the man, like the Wizard of Oz man behind the curtain situation. I think my problem is it's super annoying that some, like these NFL coaches who do this for a living and this is all they do. We do this for a living. I mean, we do, you know, we have other, like, you know, we're not, I mean, like we do this for a living. We know the rule books. Fans pour over these rule books too. The NFL, like, coaches, it's their job. It is like their only job to know this. And I don't know if the refs know it. I don't know if the refs know what's challengeable. Like, I think when a coach throws his flag, the ref's like, hold on, let me find out if that's challenge. Like he's got to go in the back. Like, he's a guy at the counter at, like, a returns department. He's like, hold on, let me go check to see if we had that in stock for you. Like, they have to know this, and somehow they don't. And they're like, Bill, I don't know if you can challenge that. And then they have to buzz up. That's my issue is, if you're going to make some stuff challengeable, make everything challengeable. Just let them, like, if you're going to give the coaches three challenges, let them challenge. If they think they got screwed, let them throw the flag. And if you give them three full challenges, and if they burn through three challenges in the first half on pass interference calls, good luck for the rest of the game. You don't have it, and you're probably too dumb, and you're probably going to get fired anyway. So I'd be fine with that, too, if we don't want to go to fully centralized replay. But at this point, it's super annoying that the NFL makes $11 billion and doesn't have, like, insane cameras on every single replay and every single situation. I mean, like, it depends on the heightened importance of the game. Like, we'll have a million cameras, goal line cams and zoom in cams for AFC Championship game and Super Bowl. But like a random Bills Jets game, it's not going to have the full juice to it. And that bothers me.
And you just mentioned cameras in the Super Bowl. Quick aside, you're going to have 8K cameras. CBS is going to have some 8K. I didn't even know 8K existed. Do you and think, they're going to have 8K cameras.
Do you think that the 8K camera is worth – do you think one – what do you think CBS values more, one of us or one 8K camera?
Oh, I mean, I have three people protecting that 8K camera. I don't walk around with three bodyguards paid for by CBS, so I guarantee you it's the 8K camera. As I would also value that more.
Yeah, they're like,
from
they're like,
a company standpoint.
They're like, listen, you've got to make a decision. You either throw this 8K camera off the Mercedes-Benz dome, or you throw Brenton off the Mercedes-Benz dome. They're like, hey, Brenton, come here, buddy. You know what? Breach, congrats. You got a daily podcast now. Get out of here, buddy. And shove me off
the podcast in 8K.
Yeah. You have a podcast.
The video podcast.
You have a podcast in 8K. That's right. Okay. The other big thing that everybody's talking about, and ironically, we bring it up now. Sean tried to bring it up on Sunday night's podcast, really trying to ruin my game plan because I was going to talk about it today anyway. Overtime. People are hot and bothered about overtime, in the wake of those games. Both of them went. You could have bet on both games to go to overtime. You got an 85-1 odds, which is really not that great for two games to go to overtime if you think about the math there. I mean, consecutive games on NFC on Championship Sunday to go to overtime, I feel like you need 1,000-1 to bet that. At any rate, the Saints Rams game went to overtime. Drew Brees gets the ball first. Everybody's thinking, all right, well, coin don't lie. Brees is going to march down the field. He's going to score. Saints are going to win. Everything will be okay. Dante Fowler gets an arm in his face. Ryan says it wasn't a shot to the head. I say it is. That's fine. Brees throws a duck up in the air. Was it John Johnson Jr. or something like that? He's like laying on his back, looking up at the sky after committing pass interference, and a ball falls on his chest. Rams get it. Greg the leg, as you predicted, Nostra Breaches, bangs home a 57-yarder to set the record and to win the game. But then people got mad because the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes never touched the ball in overtime, and they want to redo replay. What do you think they should do?
Well, let me just say, as the child of a father who holds the NFL record for most overtime field goals without a miss, yeah, little Jim Breach shout out, I loved sudden death overtime. I didn't think it really needed to be changed, and I feel like the change they made is only halfway. Like, why? If you don't want to do sudden death overtime because you want to make it harder, why are you only making it so one team gets a possession? But the flip side of that is, let's say that we're in an overtime world where Mahomes does get the ball and he goes down and scores a touchdown. So now it's back to a tie game. We're still in overtime. Then Brady goes down and scores again, and then the Patriots win. So now the Patriots still got an extra possession than the Chiefs, and they still win. You know, so what does it solve that you gave Mahomes or you give the other team a possession? So I think you either go back to sudden death or you create some world, if you're going to add it, where both teams have to have possession, then you have to go for two on every possession overtime. You need to throw in a different wrinkle that can make the game end. Otherwise, why change it?
Yeah, I mean, people were like, well, let's go to the college overtime. I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to see college overtime to decide. And this is not like, oh, the NFL is too good for college overtime or something like that. It just, college overtime feels collegey. Like, and I mean that in a complimentary way. Like, I like college overtime and I think it's insane. But I think if you did, the NFL doesn't want college overtime for regular season games because regular season games are very important in the NFL. They are much more important in college. You can't, if you lose one regular season game, you may be out of the title hunt. If you lose one regular season NFL game, you're just a team that loses one regular season NFL game. So I don't think they want to have these overtimes that end up with teams scoring 85 points. It's 85 to 81. Also, that sucks for the over-under because if you bet an under and it goes to overtime, you're totally screwed. And you don't know, the spread is out of control and all crazy. And so I don't think the NFL wants to deal with that. I do think I'd be fine with, and if they wanted to do this, well, the problem with the college thing too is if they did that, it would only be for the playoffs. And I don't think you can have that drastic a change for the playoffs. I wouldn't mind if they said, okay, here's playoff overtime. It's 15 minutes. We're going to flip a coin. Whoever gets a ball first, you know, you can, if you use up 15 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it is, if you use that 10 minutes and you're leading at the end of the 10 minutes, congratulations, you just won the game. But if somebody goes down and scores a touchdown in 5 minutes, they then kick off to the other team who has an opportunity, if they want, to go score a touchdown or go for two to try and win the game. I just think they would bring, I do like the idea of both teams getting the ball and not depending on a coin flip, but I think it is total recency bias. We're just mad that Patrick Mahomes didn't get the ball. Like if Tom Brady doesn't convert one of those third downs and they punt and Patrick Mahomes gets it, or is anybody complaining about how overtime works?
Well, here's the thing. I absolutely agree with what you just proposed, because so you're saying that the NFL should just say overtime is a 15-minute quarter, and we're playing till the end of that 15 minutes, and whoever is leading, that's the end of the game. You know, there's no golden goal. There is no walk-off field goal, no sudden death, no touchdown wins it. And here's why I like that rule. Here's why the NFL should do that, is because if you look at the four quarters, you look at an NFL game, you know when it's going to end. As a coach, in your head, if you're in the fourth quarter, you can say, hey, I need this, I need to do this. All of a sudden, you're basically taking the timing element out in overtime when it's not out at any other point in the game. So you're kind of like changing the complexion of the game. It's like adding a new rule. Like, we're going to use two footballs in overtime. That's almost what you're doing by not let timing be a component. So, So I think it makes absolute sense to just let that thing play out for one quarter and let the winner be whoever's winning.
Yeah, it's almost like when the Saints got the ball. And look, if you listen to what the Saints player said, I think Diana Russini pointed this out on ESPN earlier on Monday, but they were shook in overtime. Like, they got to overtime, and I mean, you probably noticed it. You could sense it almost coming out of the TV. I don't know how. I'm sure the stadium was like, I mean, what, it was loud, but it wasn't, it was almost like, you know, that shock of like, we were winning the game, and like, they just took it from us. And everyone knows that, like, once that first kick started going right, the 48-yarder to tie it in regulation, it started going right, and then it just cut back in and went straight down the middle. It was like, all right, the Rams are going to win this one. I don't know how, like, even if the Saints get the ball in overtime, the Rams are going to figure out a way to win it. And they did. I don't know. I just think that, I get both sides of the, overtime thing, but I don't want to blow it up and make coaches learn something completely new. I like the idea of, hey, listen, it's just like a normal football game with an extra 15 minutes. Keep coaching the way you were, run your game plan. And I think that would be more seamless and more fair, because everybody would in theory get a shot. And look, if you kick off to somebody in overtime and they would do a 15-minute 75 play, or like 15 play, 15 minute, 75-yard drive, you tip your cap and you move on. I mean, like, you just got burned. Like, that's just what you do. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the craziest things we saw on Sunday.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features, like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating, so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads, so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
All right. So John Breed still in New Orleans. I don't know. You know what's weird about podcasts, John, is that like, you don't have to reset, like, you know, because if you do a radio show, you have to reset it like every like 30 minutes. You're like, live, this is the Big Six Podcast with John Breed here. We're talking to John Breed here. But, like, you don't do that in a podcast. And why would you? I don't know. I like the podcast format better. So I don't know why I reset it. I don't know why I'm talking about it in the first place. At any rate, what was the, I don't know if it's the craziest thing, because we already talked about the pass interference, but what was the most underrated crazy thing you saw? It can be it doesn't have to be like a guy in a whistle costume. It can be, you know, the Patriots conversions of third down, the Chiefs' ability to do something like that. Anything. The most like underrated crazy storyline that you saw on Sunday in either game. And
well,
I can go first if you don't have one prepared.
Well, you can go ahead. I'll just say the craziest thing I saw not at the game was a blow-up doll, a naked blow-up doll of Jared Goff. I put out a picture of it on Twitter, but like somebody hung it up on a statue that had a spear, and the spear was in the blow-up doll's anus. It was
what?
Pure New Orleans, and maybe that is why the Saints lost. You can't go you got to use like a voodoo doll, not a blow-up doll, right?
I'm looking for this right now. Oh, my goodness. It was whoa, that's weird. So it's next to a statue, right?
Yeah, it's next to a statue.
Yikes, that's kind of creepy. Like, he's being killed, isn't he?
He's kind of being molested, killed. I can't tell.
He has no pants on. All right.
He definitely doesn't have any pants on.
It looks like the jersey is painted on him. All right, I'll retweet that once we get done.
There's no private parts showing, right? It's fair.
Yeah, it's totally fair. Yeah,
I think. Okay. Just making sure.
What is this bar partially owned by Drew Brees? What bar is that? I think it looks familiar. I love those Bourbon Street or like those New Orleans bars because they have those like long round patios. I think the craziest thing. I think here's the craziest thing I saw, and you can play off this, and I'll have some more for the Chiefs game. But I think that it really flew under the radar that that Sean McVay, down 13-0 with the ball on his own like 25 or 30, did the exact same thing that Sean Payton did the week before against the Eagles. It ran a fake punt, and it worked to perfection. The Fox cameras were fooled. Sean Payton, the guy who ran the fake punt the week before, was fooled. The entire Saints team was fooled. The Rams got the first down, and it really was one of those things where, you know, you talk about one play changing the outcome of a game. It felt like that. I mean, I get that the DPI changed it later, but it felt like that re-energized a Rams team that was hurtling towards just – you know, not being able to get anything together. Am I right or wrong about that?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Okay, so the crowd in New Orleans was nuts. You heard everybody talk about that after the game. This was the loudest I've ever heard them, I think a lot of the Saints players were saying. And that, like, quieted them down for almost half a quarter. You are winning, and like you said, the Saints were in that same situation. How are the Saints not ready for that? Not only should they have not have been ready, but you're going against a punter who's like a de facto Pro Bowl quarterback. So you should have been double ready. I mean, there's no reason the Rams should have been able to pull off that fake punt at that point in the game, and that was definitely that was a turning point. That was a turning point, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, sticking with the first half, I thought one of the, maybe not crazy, but shocking was just how bad Todd Gurley was. He was so bad, and it's totally overshadowed because A, the Rams won, and B, this whole pass interference thing. But, you know, there was a reason he spent most of the time on the bench. He even said after the game, I was a sorry ass. McVay said, everybody's like, Sean McVay, this guy's the highest paid running back in the league. Why was he on the bench? And McVay's like, because the game flow was better with C.J. Anderson in there. He's basically saying, I didn't want Todd Gurley in there without saying I didn't want Todd Gurley in there.
It felt like he was worried Todd Gurley might fumble or because he was hurt or like might do something wrong. But it definitely had – do you remember that the AFC – or maybe it was the divisional game where Rivers – I can't remember if it was the AFC championship in 2007 or the divisional game against the Colts. But it's like all I remember is shots of LaDainian Tomlinson – on the sideline in his giant puffy coat and his helmet on and that dark visor. And it's like, he's just not like, it just like Gurley was just sort of wandering around and then he was getting on an exercise bike and then he would wander around some more. And it's like Fox kept going back to it, but they asked the Rams. The Rams were like, no, he's fine. Nothing's wrong with him. It was like, what do you mean nothing's wrong with him? He was like mentioned in the MVP conversation a month ago. And now he's just not on the field. He's fine. And CJ Anderson, who weighs a deuce and a half, is out there for him. I mean, that's not a good enough explanation.
Yeah. And he had the pass that went through his hands. That was Goff's first and only interception.
Yeah.
And then he had another pass that went through his hands that might have gone for a touchdown. He would have caught it at like the 5-yard line. So he'd only run it in like 5 more yards. It wasn't going to be a huge play, but still it possibly would have been a touchdown. And I think that's what McVay saw. He said, my God, this guy cannot catch a football today. I'm not even sure he can carry a football. So I'm not going to give him the ball anymore. And we really didn't see him in the second half. I know he showed up late in the fourth quarter. But that was crazy to me that you have the highest paid running back in the league just sitting on the bench doing nothing.
I'm with you on that one. I think another thing that has to qualify is kind of crazy. And I honestly don't, we recorded the podcast so late and there was so much screaming about the whole, Patrick Mahomes thing. But I think the one thing that qualifies as crazy for me, Dee Ford lining up offsides on a 3rd and 10. Tom Brady throws an interception on the play. And it hits, Brady rolls out. Brady hits, all we talk about is how great Brady was. Brady hits Gronk in the hands and it pops up in the air and lands in the Chiefs player's hands. He runs, he's going to the sidelines, he fumbles, the ball's out of bounds, but it's clearly clear. I mean, it was definitely going to be reviewed. Did he definitely have possession? Did he make a football move? I think he did. We're about to find out. Romo's like, oh, Tony Romo's like, what sort of, oh no, Jim, oh no, it could be offsides. Oh, Jim, this is going to hurt. And then Dee Ford is there and Andy Reid points out, you know, after the game, he's like, look, that happens a lot and they get warnings. You know, he wasn't really off sides. Like he didn't jump. His hand was in the neutral zone and technically you can call it. But I mean, I get why you called it, but that is a dagger. Dee Ford wasn't even near Brady on the play. He was being double teamed the whole time. And if his hand is like 6 inches backwards, the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl right now.
Yeah. I mean, that was just crazy. And that was, I know there was some talk that, you know, because he didn't jump. He lined up offsides, which is a huge difference because sometimes a ref will kind of note, they'll wave their hand, hey, scoot back. They'll give you a warning. And, you know, maybe Dee Ford had lined up a few times early in the game. I don't know. I didn't watch it. He got that warning. But so I think some Chiefs fans were mad that he didn't get that because that is something that sometimes happens. If a defensive player is lining up in the neutral zone, the ref will give them a heads up as a courtesy once or twice, but then if they do it again, they'll throw the flag. So, you know, that was interesting. But yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that's a mistake you make on the first practice of training camp, not in the AFC championship and overtime. Or is that overtime?
It was regulation. Cause the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Well, and like, again, I mentioned this on the podcast. I had the Chiefs +3.5 and the Chiefs -3.5, that I took before the game. And so it's like, 14-0 at halftime, you're like, all right, you know, this the first one's a loser. Maybe I get the second one. And then all of a sudden, like, the Chiefs are up 4 and have an interception. You're like, I'm getting them both. And then Dee Ford. Yeah, it was a regulation. The Chiefs were up 4. It was to win the game and go to the Super Bowl, beat the Patriots and face off against the Rams again. It would have been, man.
And I'll throw another crazy thing from the Saints-Rams game is that the fact that the Rams tried a 57-yard field goal. I think that's also – everything's being overshadowed by this pass interference.
Yeah.
A 57-yard field goal to send your team to the Super Bowl is insane. That is a kick that some coaches in the NFL wouldn't even try in a regular season overtime game, let alone with the NFC title on the line. Because if you miss that, if Greg Zuerlein misses that kick, the Saints get the ball – at the 47-yard line, needing about 15 yards to get their own field goal and win the game. So you're having a lot of faith in your kicker. Zuerlein's 50-50. He's got a strong leg. Zuerlein could probably make it from 70, but once he gets outside 50, his stats are 50-50. And if you're indoors, probably goes up a little higher, maybe 60, 65%. But no matter what the percentages are, it's not a high percentage kick. So the fact that they did that, McVay could have punted there,
Pin
the Saints down at the 2-yard line, and that wouldn't have been crazy. You cannot blame someone for passing up a 57-yard field goal. So he showed a lot of faith in his kicker, and Zuerlein nailed it. And that thing would have been good from like 70.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, there was no chance it was not going to be good. I will, the other thing that I thought was, this was pointed out to me by friend of the program, Adam Gold, who is a radio host at 99.9, the Fan in Raleigh, a good friend of mine, and a podcast listener. And, although I told him not to listen to Monday's show because it's not very good. Again, apologies to Monday's show, but, should I feel this bad about it? It's probably fine, right?
Man, I am happy that I only talked for like 5 of the minutes out of the hour of that show. I feel no guilt, but yeah, it was as the third.
You were like, you were quiet and watching. Yeah. You were like, ugh. I mean, it was kind of annoying, right?
In my head, I'm making the sign, you know, the slice sign with your neck, like, you guys need to cut this. We need to move on to something else. But no, that thing was not ending. You guys were hell-bent on having your discussion.
Yeah, well, I looked at the clock at 12:30. I was like, oh, my God, I should – like, if everybody were as equally invested as, like, earning, like – at 12 – 20 minutes in, I was like, we should have reset this whole podcast. And I was like, I can't do that and expect these three guys to like stay on the, like, all right, guys, hold on. We're just going to restart and not talk about Patrick Mahomes. At any rate,
we're well, especially poor Wilson, who was up like 2 hours past his bedtime as it was.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I slept in, my wife let me sleep in, which was very nice of her. But I was up till 3 a.m. writing, sorting the Sunday pile. I wrote about 9 crazy things. You should go check that out. But Gold had a really good point on this one. So I was looking at it. Remember we talked about the, remember this, Patrick Mahomes misses Damian Williams down the field, right? And then two plays later, he takes the sack and the Chiefs have to punt and the Patriots get the ball, with 3:08 left in the second quarter and they're up 7-0, but it feels like the Patriots are up like 28-0 because they've just dominated the Chiefs up to this point. They run Sony Michel once. They run Sony Michel a second time and get a first down, but the clock goes to the 2 minute warning. So they come out of the 2 minute warning. They run Sony Michel again. He gets 1 yard. The clock gets down to 1:19 and they run Sony Michel again for 5 yards. So now it is 3rd and 4 and Belichick's not doing anything. He's not hurrying up his team. He's slowing it down. And all of a sudden Andy Reid sprints out and calls timeout. And it was like, and Gold pointed out, and I need to go back and look, but like, he thinks Belichick baited Andy Reid into calling that timeout. And I think he might be right. Because as soon as he called that timeout, the Patriots immediately pass the ball. They don't run the ball and kick it to him. They pass the ball. They get the first down. Then Tom Brady hits James White for 30 yards. They call their first timeout. James White goes 9 yards. And then the next play is the shot down the field to Philip Dorsett for a touchdown. And the Patriots are up 14-0. Belichick goes to halftime with one of his timeouts, but it did, like, looking back on it, rewatching it, it looked like he psyched Andy Reid into giving him free time for whatever reason, or just flipping the tables on him. And I do think if you're Andy Reid, I'm not saying Andy Reid mismanaged it really badly, but dude, take your medicine. Your team is down 7-0 and you play the worst half by far of your season. Take your medicine, go to halftime down 7-0, get the ball back. Don't get greedy at the end of the first half. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I was telling you, I tried to go back and watch some of that first half today, and that was definitely an interesting sequence at the end of that because it did feel like Bill Belichick had conceded, hey, this is over. We're good. If Sony Michel breaks one off here, then maybe we'll keep going, but if not, we'll just go. We shut the Chiefs out in the first half. We are happy. We are up 7-0. I don't need anything else.
Yep.
And, yeah, and then Andy Reid, classic Andy Reid. We were all waiting for it last week. It didn't happen. The classic Andy Reid meltdown where he just throws all his decision-making abilities out the window or he psychs himself out. It's something. And, you could argue that that happened because there was no reason. And maybe Reed was so desperate to get some points in the first half. Maybe that's what it was because he's saying maybe he was embarrassed that his high-powered offense didn't put up any points. But it was a little weird that in that situation, because it was only going to be third down. It's not like he was calling a timeout before fourth down.
Yeah, it's third and four. Yeah.
So it's not like it was third and 14, like something they definitely weren't. You run a draw play and then you punt. No, it's 3rd and 4. Very convertible, and so it was a little surprising to see Reed do that.
All right. Anything? What else stood out as crazy that we didn't mention? I was surprised that they didn't call the did we talk about the last possession with whether the Chiefs should take a shot or not? I think we did, right? Like, with 11 seconds left, did you think Andy Reid should have taken another shot, yes or no?
Yes. I think if you trust your quarterback, that's a totally do you trust your quarterback decision, because if he takes a sack, it's game over. If he throws it to someone in bounds, it's game over. So there's a lot of situations where it's game over. You have to just have complete and total faith that your quarterback will make the right decision. And with Patrick Mahomes, he's proven all year that he does that and that he's smart and that he would make the right decision. You throw it away if there's nothing. You throw away it immediately so you don't lose the field goal. I definitely thought – I wasn't even sure I liked the timeout sequence on that drive either. That was also a weird drive. So, yeah, I thought they should have taken another shot.
Yeah, and, you know, because he burned the first 20 seconds off the clock. Like, it went from 59 to 30 when he should have saved some more. Or he could have used his timeout there and then gone – like, and then run another play and then spiked it. It wasn't – or, like, he didn't – yeah, it just felt like he didn't use his timeouts exactly the way he wanted – I mean, ultimately, I'm not saying Sean is right about why the Chiefs lost. I mean, they lost because their defense couldn't stop the Patriots on third down. I mean, they didn't lose in the, I don't know that they lost in the first half because of their defense. They were down 7-0, you know? I mean, considering how bad the offense played to only be down 7-0, that's a win. You pick off Brady in the end zone on the 1 yard. That, by the way, that just like flies under the radar. Tom Brady threw an interception from the 1 yard line. I don't know when I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the pass interference that overshadowed everything in the Rams-Saints game. And this game, there was just so much craziness late in the game that some of that stuff early on got overshadowed. This could have been 21-0 at halftime if he doesn't throw that interception. So it was interesting. But as for the late stuff with the Chiefs, on their touchdown drive, so they were down 24-21, and they drive down, and they have first and goal at the 2 yard line, right? And a snap ball with like 2:07 left or something in the fourth quarter. Did you think don't score on the first play or don't like? I would almost kneel the ball. Patriots use their time. Worst case scenario, you have a 21-yard field goal to tie the game at 24. And I know obviously you want to get the touchdown, you want to be leading, but you're giving the ball back to the Patriots with 2:03 left. They have all their, like, make them use their timeouts. Something.
Dive at the one. Quarterback dive and then like roll forward. I'm with you. Like, you don't want to not score, but like, what would Bill Belichick have done there? Does he score immediately? I don't think he does.
No, I don't think so either. And I wouldn't be surprised if Belichick had the defense let the Chiefs score there just so the Patriots could get the ball back. And let me just say that if I'm Andy Reid, I score as quickly as possible against nearly every single team in the NFL in that situation. But against the Patriots, I am milking as many seconds off the clock as I can.
Right, because in theory, at that point in time, the Patriots would have had how many timeouts would they have had?
They had all three.
They had all three of their timeouts. So at least make them use one of them, right? I mean, like at least make them burn. Are you sure they had all three?
Maybe. Thanks.
Sure, why not? Trying to see. Timeout. They called timeout number one before the Butker field goal to send it to overtime. Yeah, so they had all three of their timeouts. You're right. If you're the Chiefs, Damian Williams goes up the middle for 2 yards at 2:06. At least get past the 2 minute warning.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Butker's kick and Cordarrelle Patterson's 38-yard return got them past the 2 minute warning. But like, so that didn't actually hurt them, but like, they didn't even need the timeout. They didn't even use their timeouts. Casey, they didn't even use a timeout on the whole drive. That's crazy. But if you had put them in a position where they at least had to like hustle up because there's minimal time left. I mean, make them burn the timeout so you can run it down to a minute, you know, or do whatever you can do. Just, I don't know. I'm with you. I think in that spot, it's a good idea to get as little time left on the clock. All right. Let's run through a couple of headlines and we'll get out of here. You can go, do whatever it is you're going to do late night. And do you know where you're going? You're going to try to go to Koshan and, parade around Bourbon Street, maybe a little Bourbon Street.
I got to see how sad the Saints fans are. I feel like in New Orleans, this is the kind of town where you drown your sorrows for 48 straight hours. So
I'm with you.
I'm going to go cry.
What did you make of Gail Benson's statement? She released a statement complaining about the no call, saying she's thoroughly disappointed and that she basically called the NFL a bunch of cheaters.
I mean, that you don't have an NFL owner come out and just rip the NFL like that. And she did it in the friendliest way possible.
Yeah, it's like the Southern thing where you say, like, you're like, bless your heart. It's like what you really mean is F your face. But, like, you're saying, like, bless your heart. That's what Southerners do anyway.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. And that's exactly what she did. There's this, this NFL's nice. But then, boom, we got screwed and you guys need to do something about it. And she just threw the NFL under the bus, which she has all the right. And my favorite part of this is what I wrote about is that after saying the Saints got screwed, she said the NFL needs to commit itself to providing more fairness and integrity. And the fact that she used integrity, that's like Roger Goodell's motto. Like, the NFL is all about integrity. We can't embrace gambling. This is Roger Goodell 2 years ago, because it might affect the integrity of the game. So he is just all about the integrity of the game. And so for her to kind of take his own words and throw them in his face tells you how upset she is. And, yeah, I mean, she said the Saints were unfairly deprived of a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And that is as vicious as you're going to hear an owner talk about the NFL. It's just, this never happens.
Yeah. Find the lie, though. Find the lie here.
Yeah.
All right. You're working the John Breach beat of, handling all referees. Tell me, who is the Super Bowl referee and why does it matter?
Well, you know, what's funny is we have John Perry.
Yeah.
John Perry is the Super Bowl referee.
P-A-R-R-Y, not P-E-R-R-Y, as some might think.
And we spent this entire week leading up to the NFC title game, the Rams fans starting the petition because they were 0-8 with Bill Vinovich. And then, obviously, Vinovich definitely did not end up screwing them over. It was, in fact, the opposite.
Right.
With John Perry, there is no 0-8 record to worry about because the Rams have never lost a game that John Perry has officiated. They are 7-0, and the Patriots aren't bad either. They're 9-5. But if you're a Rams fan, all of a sudden, hey, we're undefeated with this guy. I feel pretty good about that.
That's a pretty crazy stat. Like, how could one team be undefeated with the same referee? I mean, like, where, you know, it makes you wonder, like, where's he from? Cause, look, people can say they don't have bias all they want. All human beings have bias. Like, where is this guy from? Is he from St. Louis? Is he from Los Angeles? You know, is he a cousin of, Stan Kroenke? Like, a distant, very distant, like, 18th cousin looking to get rich. Why are the Rams 7-0 under John Perry? It's kind of wild, right?
Absolutely. The thing is, like, I saw a few tweets. People were getting crazy with the officiating stuff.
Sure.
The fact the Rams started the petition with Vinovich and being 0-8, there's like a psychological element to that. Like, if he's aware of that, all of a sudden, maybe in the back of his head, he doesn't want to think he's screwing them over anymore. And that's not just something you see in football. It's something you see in all parts of life, is you put something out. Hey, you've been screwing us over a lot. Maybe stop playing favorites. And in your head, you're like, well, I'm not doing that. But then you think about it and you're like, well, maybe they have a small point because they never win. And so it is a very odd dynamic. And, yeah, the Rams don't have to worry about that this week for the Super Bowl, though, since they're 7-0 with Perry.
Man, so just looking at this guy is a flag hog. Although he's cooled down a little bit, it looks like, in recent years. But, I mean, like, he has 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, I'm counting, like, this guy's got, like, 30 games with 10-digit penalties just for one side. This guy is a freaking animal when it comes to throwing these flags. It looks like he's cooled down in 2018, but he was the head ref in the Eagles-Texans game earlier this year, when there were a combined 21 penalties for 166 yards. This is how we dig in and find some over under value. Oh man, he was the ref for the, Steelers. Oh, John, here it is. You said the Patriots are 0-1, but in that Steelers Patriots game, the Steelers had 14 penalties for 106 yards. Patriots had 4 for 40. Interesting. This guy's a penalty machine, man.
Hey, that means the game's going to last 4.5 hours. That means more ads to sell for CBS.
All right, works for me. Does that mean over or under hits, then, you think? Penalties help you over, right?
I don't know. That Patriots Steelers game was under.
Yeah, it was. Actually, I think
way under.
I think penalties help the under because penalties mean more first downs, which mean longer sustained drives. So even though you're like,
kind of wreck the flow of the game too.
Yeah.
If there's too many.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's worth noting. We're going to dig into that a little bit more. But John's got to go dig into Bourbon Street. I'm going to take the rest of his shift. Just note for the bosses who are listening to this whole podcast. John, anything you want to plug or promote, at the end of the show? I don't know why you would have anything, but if you have anything, go for it.
Well, I would say just follow me on Twitter because we're going to be in Atlanta for the Super Bowl. And my favorite thing, I used to live in Atlanta. I know all the cool spots, even though I lived there 10 years ago, so they're probably not cool anymore. But so I'm going to take pictures of everything and probably share them on Twitter. Blow up dolls with Jared Goff jerseys. I'm going to look for more. I might even bring my own No, that sounds a little weird, so maybe I won't.
I wouldn't do that. TSA's not checking. TSA's not looking at all, so you can bring whatever you want. John and I will do our annual tour around the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, trying to get tweets out before Darren Rovell can do it about the various concessions that are available at the Super Bowl. So make sure you tune into that. Maybe we'll do like a Facebook Live or a Periscope or something from that. Follow him on Twitter at John Breach. Subscribe, listen, rate, review. Thanks for popping on, Breach. Always a pleasure, buddy.
No problem.